Welcome to the 20% True Podcast, Season 2, Dubious Creatures, Episode 7, The Salamander Log. I'm Carolyn Rahaman. Usually at Christmas time, Lois's family busted out the Yule Log DVD, and whenever they were doing something in the living room, they would enjoy the fire on the screen. They did have a real fireplace, which currently acted as a backdrop for one of their homemade stop-motion productions. It was just way too much work to have a real fire in there. You had to clean it, Lois's dad explained. The kids had never seen a real fire, or they would know that it wasn't that great. The DVD was the best of probably 5 different fires that the filmmakers had had to try. And you have to buy logs in cords, he explained, which are 4 feet by 4 feet by 8 feet. There was no way they could transport a cord. And where would they keep it? This was, of course, a lie. You can buy logs in reasonable quantities. But by the time Lois realized this, she didn't really care about fires enough to argue. So when Lois's dad announced that they were going to have a real Christmas this year, with lights that traced every window and not just the ones that he got to before he got tired, and with a turkey that he was going to cook with stuffing and sweet potatoes and cranberry sauce, not out of a can. The real fire was just one of many policy reversals. At least he didn't want them to get a real tree. Lois suspected that he had no idea how to do that. With a real fire, he said, we'll be able to use the TV to watch movies. Like Kubo and the Two Strings, her brother Mark asked.
Like Christmas movies, her dad said.
Like Frosty and Rudolph, her sister Ruthie asked.
Like movies you haven't watched 1,000 times, their dad said. Movies where we can sit down together as a family and watch it straight through, without pausing it and rewinding it to analyze every frame.
Mark and Lois exchanged skeptical looks. Mark made a stab.
Like Die Hard?
Their dad sighed and gave up. Sure, yeah, like Die Hard. Their dad negotiated a time to have the chimney cleaned, during a break in their filming schedule. They'd watched Clash of the Titans a few months ago, and were now working on their own Greek epic, The Odyssey. They dressed up the fireplace to look like a rocky beach. The chimney sweep their dad brought in did not look nearly as whimsical as Lois had secretly hoped, did not appreciate having to navigate around a bunch of sand and a clay boat, and did not appreciate Mark's hovering to make sure the tarp thrown over everything stayed taped in place. With the inside of the chimney cleaned, their dad dusted the mantle and bought 4 boxes of garland from Walgreens, along with a scented candle that smelled like Christmas cookies. How Christmas cookies smelled different from regular cookies, Lois didn't know.
You should have gotten the one that smells like pine, Mark said. Then you could pretend the garlands are real.
Or you could just make real cookies, Ruthie said. Their dad looked down at the candle in his hands, clearly at a loss. He turned to Lois.
What do you say? No to the candle?
Lois shrugged, not making eye contact with anyone.
I don't care.
Her dad smiled like that was the nicest thing she'd ever said to him. She sighed loudly and left the room before his reaction could make her feel guilty. The candle stayed. The constant cookie smell made Lois constantly hungry, and she kept checking the fridge for the cookies that came in the tube. But there weren't any there. It was when their dad came home with the salamander log that Lois really started to worry. The kids were filming, their camera on its tripod as they hunched over their character models, giving them each minute adjustments. Odysseus was frozen against the belly of a frozen sheep, mid-escape from a frozen cyclops. The fireplace mantle was hung with garlands and white string lights and a random assortment of Christmas tree ornaments. They turned off the string lights so they wouldn't throw off the lighting of their scene. The Yule Log DVD played in the background. Lois worried the film was too derivative, but she had decided that it didn't matter because her current body of work was practice, an exercise in honing her craft. It was still important, but not that important.
Like most things in her life, not caring was easiest. All their films were crap, and she wasn't going to get attached to any of them. Instead, it was the future, the projects she'd do in college and beyond that would be her true masterpieces. She'd work with tenured professionals instead of Mark and Ruthie, who fought over who got to work the camera and resolve their issues with rock, paper, scissors. In the future, she'd work with real equipment and not their old camcorder and Play-Doh. She was looking forward to it, but she tried to hold it back. Showing her excitement, or even copping to it, was an invitation for disappointment and ridicule. She wasn't sure how well she was hiding it, how well she was keeping her cool, but she was trying her best. They paused their work when their dad came in. He liked to walk around while they were filming, throwing a shadow over a frame, a different shadow over the next. Whenever he was near the set, the kids would stop their work and stare at him until he left. He wrestled with an armload of box, and Mark scrambled up to help him. Only when they got the box settled and the front door shut and their dad's scarf unwound enough to see his face, did they really take a look at the box and the bright red lettering on it. Salamander log! Fun for the whole family! There was a picture of a happy fire with a dozen or so salamanders scurrying from it, and rosy-cheeked children from the 60s sitting around playing with their new pets. "You got a salamander log?" Mark asked. Lois couldn't tell if he was repulsed or excited. "Sure did," their dad said. "But why?" "What do you mean, why? It'll be fun. We're having a real fire anyway, so I thought we'd make it extra special." "But what will we do with them?" "You play with them, like pets." "You're not supposed to do that," Ruthie said. "It's cruelty to animals, like when people get baby chicks at Easter." Their dad looked confused. This was not how he expected this conversation to go. He should have learned by then. "Yeah, it was on the news last year," Ruthie said. "There was a protest at the Julasco that was selling them." "But those people were stupid," Mark said. "People don't know what to do with the baby chicks when they get bigger, but the salamanders poof away. They don't stick around long enough to be neglected." "But you get them out by burning down their house." Mark sighed in exasperation. "They don't live in the log, dummy. They come into being when the wood is lit on fire. And when they poof, they go out of being? We'd be killing them! They don't die, they just poof. You don't know. Neither do you." "Guys," their dad said, "come on, it's fun. Good, wholesome holiday fun. No cruelty to animals, no calling each other names, just playing with smoke monsters." Both Mark and Ruthie rolled their eyes. "Dad, they're not smoke monsters. They're conjured incombustible amphibians." "Well, whatever. What they are and where they go aren't important." Their dad looked down at the box again. "You guys don't want to do the salamander log?" "We're in the middle of a shoot," Mark said, pointing at the fireplace. "Oh," their dad said, "you can't let the salamanders play on your beach?" Lois winced. Mark hissed. Ruthie shrieked, "Dad!" "So that's a no." He looked right at Lois. She considered her dad, then the box, then the fireplace. She really didn't want to do the salamander thing. Her dad looked so hopeful. "We'll be done by next week," she said. And that settled that. Her siblings took her word as law, biting down their protests of animal rights violations and cramped filming schedules. Her dad was appeased that he hadn't ruined Christmas and that Lois was on his side. The box sat in the corner, and the kids went back to the escape of Odysseus. With school out for winter break, Odysseus managed to board his ship late Saturday night. He goaded the Cyclops over his shoulder as he and his men sailed away. From checking just the raw footage, Lois thought the scene might actually turn out well enough to put on her demo reel. The way Odysseus shifted his weight as he jumped onto the railing, the way he leaned out over the water, balancing with one hand on a rope, the jaunty little wave he threw, it was some quality character animation, if she did say so herself. Mark grumped that they should keep the set intact until they were sure they wouldn't need reshoots. But he did his muttering while following Lois's lead, sweeping sand back into its mason jar and pulling the pins from the cellophane waves. Lois did not care about reshoots. They got everything packed away Sunday afternoon, and 30 seconds later, their dad was plugging back in the twinkle lights and turning off their DVD and breaking open the salamander log. The kids sat quietly on their knees, gathered around the fireplace, unsure how put out they should be. Their dad made up for their discomfort with obliviousness, believing with a vengeance that they were all as thrilled as he was. He had a genuine smile on his face and a twinkle in his eyes, excited as a little kid, except that the little kids weren't all that excited. Ruthie was pouting, probably about the poor salamanders they were going to murder. Mark had the same "I'm being forced to be here" look that he had when he had to sit in a waiting room or be in a family photo. Lois just didn't know. It was too weird to be exhilarating. What were they even doing? Why were they doing it? How was she supposed to act? What was Dad expecting, or Mark expecting, or Ruthie expecting of her? What would make her most relatable? The best daughter versus the best sister versus the best at having it all together? She didn't know what she was feeling enough to fake anticipation, or trust herself enough to let any of the anticipation she might have show. The log looked pretty normal, but of course, Lois didn't have much frame of reference for what normal logs look like. It looked like the ones on the fireplace DVD, except that those were already on fire. In addition to the log, the all-inclusive box held other, smaller logs, and a bag of sawdust or something that was supposed to be kindling, a book of matches, a box of instructions, a fat envelope that looked like the packets of powdered cheese that came with the mac and cheese, popcorn kernels, and a bag of what looked like cat toys. Their dad reached in and hauled open the flue, then set up all the logs exactly as described in the instructions. He set the salamander log into the grate in the fireplace, as if it were either very heavy or very delicate. Then he sat back on his heels to read about the powder packet. The salamanders wouldn't cross the powder in the envelope, so they were supposed to open it up and pour a thin, unbroken line around the area. Otherwise, the salamanders might poof out immediately, or escape to hang out in the oven, or touch Christmas dinner, or run off to live in Ruthie's blankets and touch her face while she was asleep. Their dad snipped off the side of the envelope and poured a line of powder. It looked like graphite and smelled like brimstone. He shook the little packet, shake, 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 as he passed, encircling the kids in a semicircle that stretched onto the hardwood. Lois squirmed away as he passed her, but there wasn't a whole lot of room, so she shifted back once he had made his way around Mark, checking that her fuzzy slippers didn't brush through the line. Ruthie poked at the line nearest her. "Hey, hey!" Their dad paused. "Leave it alone." "It's not a circle," Ruthie argued. Their dad leaned over Ruthie to check it. The curve was misshapen over there. Flatter. "Well, it doesn't have to be exact." He went back to laying down his line. "Don't make the circle too big," Mark said. "You'll run out of dust." "There's plenty of dust," their dad said. Lois quietly pressed a finger into the powder, not breaking the line, but just feeling the texture, the fineness, the way it sparkled when it caught the light, the way it smudged her skin. "Okay." Their dad sat back on his haunches and surveyed his work. "How's it look?" "I think you did it wrong," Ruthie said. Their dad's eyebrows pulled together. "Why do you think that?" "Shouldn't something magical happen when you finished?"
"No," Mark said.
"Yeah, something magic should happen, like a noise."
"Like a firework?" Mark asked.
"I don't know, just something. You must have left a hole somewhere." They all looked around for a break in the line, but no one found one. "Do you have to do it inside the fireplace too?" Ruthie asked. "You need to circle the fire. Maybe they can still get out the back of the chimney."
Their dad turned back to the instructions.
"They can't go through walls," Mark said. "They poof," Ruthie argued.
Their dad climbed into the fireplace and traced the back wall, just in case. When he made a full circuit around the log, nothing magical happened. Ruthie pursed her lips, skeptical. Their dad looked over the instructions one more time, then tossed them from the circle and readied the matchbook. "Everybody ready?" No one said anything, so Lois was the one to say, "Yeah." He struck the match and lit the kindling and sat back. The fire caught and crackled, slipping from the kindling to the logs, popping up on the far side. The flames seemed to bounce, to pulse. The family waited with held breath and tightened muscles as the flames built around the salamander log, forming a kind of cushion around it from underneath. Lois's eyes started to water from watching so intently. Mark picked at a loose string in the hem of his shirt, his eyes as fixed on the log as Lois's. She wished for some music, even holiday music, to ease the tension when something popped and Ruthie jumped. An ember leapt out and they all sucked in a breath. The heat on Lois's cheeks made her flush, and she thought about taking off her sweater, but she knew as soon as her head was stuck inside, the first salamander would come out. Then, there! Something protruded from a crack in the log, spade-shaped and black as the wood, pushed through like a nail, birthed as the log opened and splintered around it. A wide eye reflected the fire that bathed it. Four toes, an arm, a body. It came out in jerks, in pops, stilling in between, stilling enough to make you doubt. Maybe it was just a knot or a twig. Then it was free, breathing hard before the fireplace. Its eyes darted, taking them in. Then it darted. Ruthie squealed and scooted away, and Mark hissed at her not to break the dust line, leaning in to get a better look. The salamander crept closer, then closer, darting a few inches at a time. It had two settings, on and off. It reached Ruthie's knee and she tensed, pulling herself tall to get as far away from it as possible. Her dad put a hand on her shoulder, leaning over to smile at the critter. It scurried up Ruthie's knee and she shrieked again, but this time less out of fear than surprise. She laughed not like it was fun, but like she didn't know what else to do. And then it ran up her leg and she was laughing because it tickled. Another head appeared, just a foot from Lois. It was staring at her. She stared back. It licked its own eyeball. She reached out a hand because that was what you were supposed to do with dogs, let it smell you. But instead of sniffing her, it scuttled onto her hand and she lifted it into the air, and it stared at her from just a few inches from her nose. It was warm, not hot like she'd expect from something that had just popped out of a fire, but warm like holding a mug of hot chocolate between your hands to stay warm. Mark laughed, holding out his arm like a scarecrow to make a perch for the critter on his wrist and the other at his elbow. Ruthie giggled, squirming as a couple circled her neck, chasing each other through her hair. Her dad was gleeful, trying to take pictures of them with his phone while one of the salamanders took up residence on his screen. He laughed, a full, deep belly laugh, and looked over at Lois, so much love and affection in his eyes that she felt something crack. Some dam she'd created to protect herself, and protect her cool and protect her family from her uncoolness. They were happy, and it would be okay to be happy with them. She smiled back. The fire had burned down to a normal old split log that glowed every here and there without burning. Mark had conked out just outside the circle. His body curled to stay as close to the salamanders as he could. Ruthie had fallen asleep with her head on their dad's leg, still in the circle and still holding one of the feather-on-a-stick cat toys that the salamanders had, against all odds, found entertaining. A couple of the salamanders lazed in the folds of her baggy sweater, their heads poking out, unmoving except to occasionally blink. Popcorn crumbs dirtied the area. They'd fed the salamanders kernels, which had popped in their stomachs. Lois had assumed it would be painful, and gone as far as to protest, like Ruthie and her animal rights. But the salamanders actually loved it, and swarmed around Mark as he held the bag of popcorn, impatient for their turns. Lois had set up their camera, filming one of the salamanders from the tripod, just letting the film roll. She had an idea for a film, combining the live action of the salamander with a stop-motion fire. Her dad broke the silence with a quiet question. "Are you having a good Christmas?" "Yeah," she said. "You were right. This was fun." "Good," he said. He looked misty-eyed, like maybe sitting this close to the fire was getting to him. Or like he had a leg cramp, but didn't want to shift and wake Ruthie. "You can think back on this when you go off to college." "I guess," she said. "I'll probably think about all the other Christmases first." "Right." He broke eye contact, looking down at Ruthie. He stroked her hair, dislodging a salamander, who scurried away, maybe through the frame of Lois's shot. "That would be great." She looked through the viewer to check. "I know I didn't give you kids the best Christmases. I'm sorry it's too late to make up for that." "What?" She looked up, but he didn't. "Dad, are you serious?" "Of course. I was lazy. I didn't realize how much I should cherish this time with you. I'm sorry I didn't make the effort earlier." "You made an effort." He shook his head. "All these years and this is our first fire." "But that's nonsense," she thought. "Absurd." Really, it was shocking how little her dad got it. That he didn't understand something so basic that she had never explained it to him. And now he was having feelings other than confusion. Now he was sure. But he was also wrong. For a moment, her dad was a person. A person who had had to deal with all their precociousness. For just a glimpse, he was more than a doofy bumbler. "That doesn't mean we didn't like it," she said. "That we didn't have fun. We like the half-strung lights and the cookies that you slice up and they have the picture of the tree in the middle. Those are our traditions. We don't need someone else's traditions, or people to tell us how to do it right, or how to do it real. We like the fireplace DVD, Dad. That's what I'm going to think back on." He looked up at her then. For a long moment, it didn't look like he believed her. But just like looking at the fire so long that it started to look strange, his expression started to warm. "You're a good kid, you know?" She averted her eyes and shrunk back, hoping the warmth of the fire would cover her blush. Her dad laughed. Then he reached down and ran his fingers through the line of powder. The salamanders perked up their heads like they'd heard a bell. Then they burst into clouds of smoke, holding the shape of a salamander for the blink of an eye before dissipating into the air. The 20% True podcast was written and produced by me, Carolyn Rahaman. Music was composed by Kamiku. If you like the show, please rate and review on iTunes so new people can find it. Follow the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/20percenttrue, where you can leave comments, ask questions, and share your favorite cryptozoological holiday memories. Check out my website, 20percenttrue.blogspot.com, for updates, thoughts on writing, and book reviews. Or follow me on Twitter at CarrieNTheHits.